Today on Cool Cars with Chris, Courage joins us back after his long road trip up to Sacramento, where he had a chance to rent a Silverado EV RST with 750 horsepower. You'll hear that story. Plus, we talk about a little bit behind the scenes of what it's like being a YouTuber creating content. And of course, what does it actually cost to charge up that Silverado EV? You'll find out what he actually paid. All that and more on this episode. Let's go. All right, we are back with another edition of Cool Cars with Chris. And like always, we have our amazing co-host from up the north, up the 15 freeway. We have Courage. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing well. Thanks for the intro. I appreciate that. Glad to be on. Always Man, fun.
The famous YouTuber Courage himself. How is your YouTube channel doing, by the way?
It's doing decent. This week I've been a little off on kind of posting schedule. So I've mainly just been keeping an eye on some of the analytics from some videos I posted last week. But I got some back footage that I'm going through now, and I got to already have like two or three videos planned. So just working through, it's the grind, but you know, I'm having fun with it, and I feel like it's getting some steady growth.
That's great, man. Yeah. I mean, you're doing great with your YouTube channel. When you do post stuff, do you normally try to post like every week, every other week, or you just kind of post when you have something ready?
Usually I do try to have something every week, but usually for like long form, like my, you know, any videos that are longer than like 4 or 5 minutes, that's like, I try to do that every 2 weeks. And then sprinkled in there, I do, you know, I'll have shorts. I'll have a couple of shorts either throughout the week or like every week I'll get a short out. So I kind of mix it up with that because the short content I can, you know, more quickly build that out and put that together. The long form content is usually centered around, say, like a specific situation. So I like to take a little bit more time with that. But that's been kind of the cadence, is like a long video every 2 weeks, and then every week kind of have a short that kind of goes along with it.
Do you use those shorts for Instagram Reels too, like crossover?
I tried doing that initially, but I just felt that like I had to adapt them differently for like each platform, which really? Is, you know, which is interesting. Like there's only a few as of late that I've like kind of directly taken, say I've done it for YouTube and then I posted it exactly the same for Instagram. I just noticed that like the type of content that I do with my YouTube video, my YouTube shorts, which is usually around like a topic, say like a car company's history or like random facts about, you know, Ferrari or Lamborghini or Chevy and comparisons and things like that, or is just a little more tailored to YouTube the way that I do it. My Instagram is a little bit more of just like kind of highlights, particularly with the end and like, you know, doing highlight shots and cool little reels and things like that. You know, I'll probably have some more crossovers as the two kind of platforms grow. But yeah, I kind of make different content for different platforms, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. But I'm kind of lazy, so I just make it once and then send it out to everywhere I have an account. Just send it out and you all can enjoy. You know.
And it works for some people. I don't say that like my way is at all correct. Like it works for some people to have that just, you know, yeah, this is my content and you can find it on these different sources. But yeah, I've just kind of adopted that. I just kind of have this approach for YouTube and then I have this approach for Instagram, and seems like it's kind of working a bit.
I think the audience is much different on YouTube versus Instagram. Maybe they're the same. Maybe, I don't know. And I wonder if the audience is different, say on like a TikTok versus an Instagram account. I don't know. Listen, I'm no expert in this kind of stuff, but I'm just like winging it as I go and just figuring it out, making something that I think it's fun. Well, here, I'll just put it here, put it there. I own it. It's my content. I can do whatever I want with it, so I can send it out to anywhere I want. Yeah. And anybody can enjoy it no matter where they're at. I kind of think of like I don't want a certain platform. Like say some people only post on one platform, right? But what if I don't have that platform? Say I don't have TikTok or whatever. So you're going to deprive me of watching your cool stuff by keeping it only on TikTok. Why don't you share it on Instagram or even YouTube or whatever? So I don't know, you know?
TikTok's an interesting one, though. I've been hearing a lot more buzz about TikTok and particularly how it's quote unquote algorithm works. You know, one guy that I know that does marketing for a big like off-road company, he says that they transitioned to doing TikTok like about a year ago. And the thing about it is that it's a lot more randomly generated in terms of the content that it pushes. And it's actually really centered around, it's, you know, I think all content is centered around like what's trending. But TikTok, he was telling me, particularly music is like a big part of TikTok. Like certain songs will start to just become like the wave on TikTok. And once you kind of clue into like what's the trending music and you build things around that, that's how all of a sudden your content starts just getting pushed out heavily to a lot of different types of people and kind of helps your overall kind of profile grow.
Instagram does that too. Instagram's got the trending songs. You can look up what's trending or whatever. And when I put music to stuff on Instagram, I just look at whatever's trending. I'm like, hey, that sounds cool. I'll use that or whatever. Well, I'll find something I like. But if it's something's trending, it's kind of cool. It's like, I'll toss it in there or whatever.
Yeah.
And honestly, though, dude, when I look at my phone's on silent. So I really rarely hear any of the songs and stuff that are posted on anything. Unless I like, unless it's like a reel that where someone's talking or something's actually happening where I actually got to hear whatever it is, then I guess I'll hear it. But for the most part, I think most people keep their phone on silent. Do you keep your phone on silent?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, like, and sometimes I'll do it just because, like, I've lost my phone sometimes, and I'm like, man, I wish I just like had taken it off silent. But that's a really good point. And actually, a funny thing about that is, I started with YouTube, particularly. I started to notice an uptick in like views on my short videos when I started using captions on my videos. Because a lot of people, and I'm like that too, where like you said, like sometimes I won't have my volume on, but I'll watch a reel and read the captions, but I'm not listening to the audio. And I noticed that once I started doing that, that I was getting more views because it's that group of people that maybe just as when they're watching or whatever, like they're not listening to the sound, but they can still engage with it because they can read the captions.
That reminds me, I gotta start doing that. The last two reels I made, I put out there. I did not put any captions on there. I don't think I did. So I just put them up so quickly. I just record them and throw them up so quickly. I don't even think about that kind of stuff. So it's another like thing you got to think about when you start posting content. Like you have this entire checklist of things. Like first you got to like record the whatever it is. You got to record that. And then you got to like think about, well, how's this going to like be? Is it going to be like in this format or that format? All the different filters you might use or any kind of like audio compression sounds or any kind of sound stuff you're going to use. Music you're going to choose for whatever you're posting, if you have music on it and stuff. List can go on and on. So I think that it helps having like either a mental checklist or just have it written down, you know? Like it kind of helps me to like know when I do a podcast that I have these check marks I got to do, especially with clients and their show, which is pretty simple, but I still have kind of the same format. Like record it, like do some editing on it, make it sound great, make it all sound perfect. And then the rest of it's like, the show notes and the titling and all that kind of stuff, which for the most part, AI handles all that stuff because I mean, I was horrible at titling episodes before. It was kind of basic stuff. So, but anyways, you were going to tell me that you had an interesting week. Was it last week or the week before that? Some cool car stories. What you got, man?
Yeah, so it was. I guess you could say we're still in this week, but the first half of this week, I actually had to take a work trip up to Sacramento.
You drive or fly for that?
I flew this time. I have taken that drive because I'm from the Bay Area originally, and so I've taken that drive before in the past, but it was just too tight of a turnaround to drive up there. So I flew, which luckily with all of the shutdown and all of the, you know, delayed flights, I had a smooth, you know, flight there
that
and back.
That is incredible. So, that is a hero story in itself, buddy.
Absolutely. I am very grateful that I didn't have to deal with a lot of that situation, but not related to cars, actually. I'm really impressed with the new airport, the new terminal here at San Diego.
Terminal One, it's all done.
It's pretty much done, and it's gorgeous. Like
Is it better than Terminal Two?
I've never been in Terminal Two because really? I've always flown Southwest, and they've always been in Terminal
One. That's right. Yeah, I mean, I flew Hawaiian out of Terminal Two. I guess the only two times I've been on Terminal Two was Hawaiian. I think about it. I did fly in Terminal Two a couple times for other things too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't experienced Terminal 2, but yeah, I mean, if it's, I mean, because I think they're going to now move to Terminal 2 now that they're done with 1, I think. But it's gorgeous. Like, I'm a sucker for a lot of, like, architecture and, like, these, like, cool, like, you know, kind of designs and things that they incorporate into, like, you know, hotels and airports. But they did an awesome job. I was proud of it because I'd fly to other places and, like, I'd come back to San Diego. Like, San Diego's such a beautiful place. Like, why does this airport not represent that?
But it's so small, man. They got one runway. It's really small. It's really, really hard to fly into San Diego. It's like one of the worst airports of all the airports we have around here, or I guess in the country, that pilots like say it's like very challenging to fly. If you see how the flight path.
Yeah, you're flying in like over like apartment built, like you're going straight through downtown gas lamp.
Yeah, like your wings can like clip buildings, you know?
Oh my God. I mean, it's cool when you're on it and you're watching and you're like, you know, seeing yourself come into the airport like that as a passenger. But I can't imagine the amount of stress you're under as a pilot.
Well, they do it time and time again though. I don't think they've had any accidents, you know, that I know of. I mean, they had that one back in like the 70s, the one that crashed. I think it was in North Park area. But that was because a Cessna clipped the airplane. They collided.
Oh, they actually had a collision. Wow.
Yeah, and then the plane came down. There's a whole, I think it's somewhere North Park area is where it went through a whole neighborhood. This is like the late 70s, early 80s, sometime around then. Every year on the anniversary, they always have a thing on the news about it. You know, they always go over there to the crash site. There's like a memorial and all that stuff. And they talk about it.
I never even knew about that.
Yeah, they talked about it just recently. Whatever they happened. I think it was in April. But anyways, so go on.
Yeah, so I flew out to Sacramento and plugged to Turo. They sponsor people, so maybe a potential sponsor. But ever since I discovered Turo, and if you don't know about Turo, it's basically like an Airbnb for cars, essentially. So people are renting out their cars the same way they would rent out their place in their house now, or whatever.
Are they only personally owned like cars, or could it be like a company who had a fleet of cars wanted to do that too?
They do that now too, which the guy that I actually rented through, he has a fleet, I guess you can say now. He has about 3 to 4 cars hosted on the platform. And so, you know, that qualifies as a fleet for them. And so you do have companies that, you know, actually have transitioned from, say, they knew how like inner workings of like, you know, rental car companies with airports worked. And they sort of just kept that same idea and moved over to Turo. But this guy had a few cars, one car that I thought would be great to make content around. And because I knew I was going to be doing a bit of driving, because I was actually going to go to Oakland and see some family and things like that. And so I really wanted to drive the Charger EV. Because I know that car...
Don't get a ticket for having a loud exhaust, quote, wink, wink.
I'm telling you, I heard one in person recently. I heard one drive by. I was in San Diego area down by La Jolla area, actually. And I heard one drive by and I heard like what that sounds like. And I was actually pretty blown away at like how loud it is for something that is completely fake. It's like,
does it have like that bass like rumble, or is it kind of like a higher pitch sound?
No, it really is like a bass rumble. Like if you knew nothing, absolutely nothing about cars, you would just think that it was a loud like Mopar car driving by.
Does it sound more like a V8 or V6?
No, that's the weird thing about it is that it's almost just noise because it's not like a traditional engine where you kind of hear it go up and down the rev range. You kind of hear it go like accelerate, but it's really just like a constant rumble that kind of comes out of the car as it's driving by.
Yeah, so, I kind of imagine it's like when you were a kid and you put like a playing card in the back tire of your bicycle.
Yeah. And it's like, it does sort of like increase as you increase speed, but not the same way that an engine does.
Okay.
So, you know, it was, but I mean, I've seen so much content and so much, you know, kind of dislike and, you know, about the Charger EV. And when it first came out, I thought the car looked like a Charger, which, you know, they kept the look while still evolving it, which I thought was impressive. And I mean, we knew that they were going to try doing an EV. And so I mean, it has the power. It has like 500 to 600 horsepower and like even the base model. And I thought that them kind of doing the fake engine noise, to be honest, I thought it was cool. Like I was, you know, it's not going to replace what a, you know, V8, you know, sounds like. But I thought it was a cool concept. So
did you get to drive one?
So that's where the story gets interesting, is I didn't get to drive it because, funny enough, even if it's an EV Dodge, it was in the shop during the time where I wanted to
rent. How ironic is that?
So he messaged me after I booked it. What could be
the shop for? I don't understand how EVs can go in the shop. Is it for a software upgrade? I mean, I don't know what else could it be.
The only thing that I can think that it would be in the shop for is probably something like brakes.
They still use brakes and tires.
Because brakes are just the car is so heavy.
Well, it's probably, it's heavy regardless if it's electric. Those are big cars.
Yeah. So add batteries, and I'm sure that car weighs, 5,000 plus pounds or something like that. And so that's the only thing that I can imagine. I mean, hopefully it's not like software issues or something like that, but.
Yeah, I heard about Dodge and their software issues with their touchscreen. I heard like always glitches up, has issues and stuff. Maybe that's what it was, but I don't know. So what car did you end up getting then?
So this is actually going to turn into some content on the channel. So, anybody who might kind of, tune into both sides of the coin, your podcast and watch any of my videos, this is going to be me going out on a limb for my first like kind of bigger production non-Elantra N content.
Okay.
But I've never experienced big trucks before.
Like in terms my size of truck or like bigger trucks?
Bigger, a bit bigger. In a sense, a bit bigger. And he has a kind of EV fleet. And so he had two other cars. He had the Lyriq, the Cadillac Lyriq, which, kind of they're like SUV type, luxury.
It's like the Suburban, but the Cadillac.
A little bit.
Is it bigger? Yeah. Same thing, probably.
No, it's about the same. It's actually probably a little smaller than the Suburban. But he also had a Silverado EV.
Well, that's the same size as my truck. It's a 1500 or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, they're probably about the same size, but I've never experienced like driving a truck like that.
What?
In terms of that size truck. And so I thought it would be a really interesting experience to obviously feel that kind of truck lifestyle a little bit, experience that for a few days, but also experience obviously a truck that's got 750 horsepower.
Yeah. It's all electric. And is it really quiet when you drive the thing? Real smooth and quiet?
The loudest thing is obviously the fake noise that they use to like basically alert. They put fake noise in that too? It has fake noise, and you can actually adjust it in the menus. Like it has like different ones that you can turn it off completely, but it always plays it outside because it's the whole EV regulation where because EVs don't make noise, hear like the whirring noise like from the outside, but you hear it really Tesla's loud on the inside.
I always hear a Tesla with that whirling noise, and I thought there's something. Yeah. I thought those things make noise. Those things are got a bad engine. Those motors sound horrible.
Yeah, no, that's all fake noise, but it's really for the safety of the people because you don't hear an EV creeping up.
You run over a kid.
Yeah, you might hear like some tire pebbles and getting caught in the tires or something, but you usually don't really hear them as they're approaching. So that's really the loudest thing that you hear from it. But again, you're talking a truck that weighs 6,000-7,000 pounds or something like that. And it has 750 horsepower, and all you hear is that like whirring noise is an interesting experience. But I had a chance to try it out. I my work meeting was, kind of 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday. But in between on Tuesday evening, I actually drove it 90 miles, 180 miles both ways from Sacramento to Oakland. Got a chance to experience Super Cruise and, just experience what it's like being on the highway long-term with the truck and overall just, kind of got a little short little test drive with it in a sense, or long-term test drive with it.
I wonder if their EV truck is based on the regular truck or is it a whole new platform and chassis? I know the F-150's Lightning is completely different versus my truck. It's a completely different a different suspension. They use like leaf springs in the back. They use some kind of like coil springs in the back of the EV and leaf springs in regular trucks most use leaf springs in the back. So I wonder if the suspension that is different than the regular truck.
I would err on the side that it is because it's actually on a similar platform as the Hummer EV. And, that truck's even more massive than the Silverado EV, just like in width and whatnot. But yeah, I would err on the side of it being like its own platform. Like,
did it have the crew cab or a single cab or what kind of cab configuration was it?
So, because crew cab means it just has like the front and the back seats. And
like four doors. Full doors. So, like big doors. Not like, cause this, I think Chevy had a mini door one. They had like, it was like a the front two doors were normal size, but the ones in the back seat were like kind of like half size doors. Was it like that or full size doors?
No, it's full on. Yeah, it's a full on crew cat. And that shows my nature of not knowing a lot about trucks. But yeah, it was a full crew cat. I mean, and the back seat is huge.
Oh yeah.
You know, so much space in the back
seat. It is. If you're coming from something smaller, like when I came from my other pickup truck into my first F-150, which is like the one I have now. And it had the back seat. I'm like, this is like a freaking limo back here. Yeah. It's like so much space back here. So it was really, really, it was so hard to like figure out how to navigate, how to park the thing. I'm assuming yours had like parking assist.
All of the cameras.
Yeah, cameras and all that. My other truck didn't have any of that. It didn't have a backup camera or sensors. My other F-150, it was the same size as the one I have now. And so I'd use my mirrors and look over my, you know, over my shoulder and look back, you know, in the back seat and all that stuff.
But, I can't even picture what that would, the amount of anxiety I would have, you know, obviously this being the first truck experience, but not having all of that tech, you know, even parking next, like just parallel parking and getting close to the curb was tough. And it has a side camera. So it like shows you where your wheel placement is.
Does it do the automatic parallel parking like some of these fancy cars do?
I don't know if it did. I didn't get too much into those type of features. It probably does. And I think the RST version, which is what I have or what I had, does like the crab walk feature, if you've heard about that.
So it's the same one that the Hummer EV does. It's a crab walk.
I think it does. Yeah. I didn't have a chance to kind of dig enough into it to kind of figure out if that one had that feature. But I have seen videos of it doing that. And so you could actually kind of use that crab walk feature to kind of help you get into parking, you know, spots too. But I don't know if any of those models have like a full parking, like full on like parking assist to get you in the spot. It might, but I didn't use it if it does have that feature.
Well, did you drove for 2 days, you said?
Yeah, so I got picked it up Monday evening, kind of late. I did a little bit of driving that evening. Yeah, drove it the, you know, almost 200 miles on Tuesday, and then Wednesday did a few little things after my work meeting before the flight. So, you know, it's 2.5 days.
Okay, the question I have, and the audience probably has, is how did you charge it? How long did it take? And is it compatible with like the standard like Tesla charging ports?
Good question. So I did have to charge it because when I got back from Oakland, I was on like 20%. Give or take.
Dude, that gave me anxiety range so bad.
Yeah. I got the range anxiety. Like, I thought that the range anxiety wouldn't be as much of a thing with a truck that has actually a 400-mile, like, range at fully, you know, being fully charged.
Yeah,
but
it's like a gas tank. Dude, it's like a high estimate.
Exactly. Yeah, it depends on how you're driving. And, you know, and obviously, you know, I put my foot down a few times on some straight roads.
Of course you did, man. I would have done that.
Had to experience it. And so, you know, you're obviously, you know, now depleting that a lot more than the EPA rating for its overall kind of, you know, distance rating. But I did have to charge it the last day. And that was an interesting experience because I went to an EVgo spot because I just didn't have any Tesla superchargers around. I think that he included a Tesla adapter. So I think it does have the capability to charge at like a Tesla supercharger, but you'll have to like plug in the adapter and then, you know, hook it up and go through all of that. And so, but the EVgo that I went to was like a fast charging EVgo that like charges at, you know, up to 350 kilowatt hours, I believe.
Well, you're the solar dude. So what does that mean?
Roasted too, because it's just the rate that ultimately it can charge up. Like there's just different ratings. That's pretty much as high as you.
And you gotta pay more for that. I would think.
And this is where I was actually pretty surprised because, you know, I there was a Best Buy across, and so I knew it was gonna take about like it actually said to go fully charged. It was actually gonna take, because I got there at 2:40, 2:50. And it said it would take until 4:05 to fully charge all the way to 100% from 20%. And the interesting thing about that is because I think we talked about it a while back on the EV podcast was they recommend you don't charge up to 100% all the time.
Hey, it's not your car, dude. It's not your car. I charge that thing up, give me a full tank.
Yeah.
Or full charge, what do you call it?
You top off and you try to not sprinkle a little bit of gas. Yeah, like I'm kind of the same way. But I, you know, to charge up to 80% really only took about like 25 minutes or so.
Now, you have to sit in the car while it's happening, or can you leave?
No, you can leave. I hung out for a little bit just to make sure and kind of look at the rate and see how, you know, see how much, which it didn't, it starts out kind of charging and it only does about like 150 to about 200 kilowatt hours of charge rate. And then as it like starts to, the conditioners start to come on, that's when the charge rate starts to get closer to that 350, that maximum charging speed. But it, so that extra 20% after 80% is what takes the longest, because at that point, I believe, is when it limits how much charge rate it's going to charge at.
I heard Elon Musk say something about that a long time ago. He was saying about batteries, how batteries work when they do charge, especially EVs, his Tesla and all that, was that he compared it to an empty parking lot. He says, if there's an empty parking lot with a few cars in there, you can whip in there and get a space very easily.
Yeah.
But when the parking lot's fuller and cars trickle in there, they're circling around trying to find a parking spot. I guess the electrons or whatever that are filling up the battery kind of
they're like
something.
Trying to find, yeah, like this, like what cells need more charge and balancing it all. And
right. So I think when it's empty, it's just easier to flood it all up with whatever they do. And then it becomes tighter towards the last, like you said, 80% when it hits
80%. Last 20%.
When it hits 80%, 20%. Is when it starts getting tighter to fill those little spots or whatever. Which
that's
does
interesting.
Make, yeah, it does make sense, I guess. So you filled it up and you brought it back. Now, when you take the car back, do they have to like check off at what battery percentage it is when you leave? So when you bring it back, you have to bring it back at the exact same juice level like you do on a rental car?
Yeah, so it's a bit similar. One thing I wanted to add real quick on the charging side of it was the cost, which was
how much was
though.
It?
So it was to go from 20% to 80-ish percent was $65.
Holy crap.
And that blew me away.
Holy crap.
I'm like, yes, that's maybe cheaper than it would cost to fill up gasoline.
Okay,
in a big truck.
If you were to compare, like, okay, so you have to figure out, convert it into gasoline, for example. So let's just say, if you could, I don't know if we can figure this out, but let's just say we could figure out how many gallons of gas you think that was you put in the tank. Even though it wasn't gallons, it was, you know, electricity. But how many, like, if you compare it to gallons, so I can figure out gas price-wise.
Well, let's do this. How do you know, like, the fuel capacity of your truck?
Yes,
like,
I do. And I have the Big Daddy tank that came as an extra add-on to the thing. Uh-huh. So, my older F-150 had a 26-gallon tank.
Oh, wow. Shoot. Okay.
Same engine.
What's yours?
The new one I have has 36.
Oh my goodness, that's crazy.
And I never, ever, ever, ever take it to empty.
I've never
taken it to empty. Come close going to Vegas, I got down to quarter tank, and that was the closest I ever got to like empty. But I've always had it like at half a tank, I fill up. I just fill up at half a tank. And at that price, that when I fill up half a tank, it depends on the price of gas, of course, but it could be about $70, $80.
Yeah. Well, let's play a very unique scenario that you're one of those, like, I know my car type people, and you run yourself down to E pretty much. And then you're like, okay, well, I'm just going to go and fill up completely. I did a little calculation right on the side real quick.
Okay.
So call it 30. You said 36 gallons.
Yes, that's right? My truck is 36 gallon.
And let's call it, maybe I'm being conservative, but probably like what, $5.60 a gallon? Maybe would
no, it's like $5 a gallon. Depends.
Let's do that, because it was actually a pretty crazy number. I mean, it's probably not going to be.
Oh, come
that
on,
much.
Man. You know, I mean, I know this. I mean, I think the thing is too. I never feel it. Just feels easier on the wallet when you fill it from half.
I know, 100%. Yeah, your mind is thinking of it a lot different.
Even though theoretically, in the long run, it's all the same, really. But so, yeah.
So let's say equivalent, that was $65. And I guess it's weird too, because it wasn't from E on the chart, the Silverado EV either. But, you know, let's just call that was maybe $100. If like you really just, you know, you were all the way at 2% and you charged all the way to 100%, you'll tack on another $20-$30. For I calculated right now, which a 36-gallon tank at $5 a gallon, $180.
Yeah, I figure that much. I figure that much. But also, you said how far of range could that vehicle, quote unquote, do if it was
all ideal?
Yeah, I mean, if it was ideal situation and it was ideal, what did it say, 400-mile range?
400, yeah.
Okay, my truck same thing, says 600 mile range.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I go another 200 miles in theory. So you got
to
figure
that. And you're most likely going to probably get a lot closer to that in your truck than you will in an EV.
Okay. So, well, yeah, I mean, so
then, it's kind of than the max.
Yeah. So it might come pretty close, maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that blew me away because I was not expecting that. And it's weird too because the rate actually fluctuates as the charging, you know, rate ramps up. And so initially it was actually projecting it was going to be like $5 or $6, $7, $10, something like that. And that was when I left and went into the store. And so when I came back, the screen, it like went to sleep on the charger. And so I, you know, go on and I'm like, okay, let's see what the rate's at or what the capacity's at. And I look and I see it's like around $59. And I'm like, what? Like that? What? First of all, that escalated quickly. And two, I was like, okay, well, you know, obviously this is still maybe saving you a little bit more than you would with gas, but not a whole lot.
Maybe not a lot because they could add those extra 200 miles that I get on my truck, add those into what it would cost you to fill up and give yourself an extra 200 miles worth of charge, which would be half a thing, right? Because they said it's half a battery because you said they had 400 miles of range. Yeah. So half of that would be 200 miles. Add the 200 miles to that. So it'd be half of whatever full charge would be. Add that on top of the charge. So you're probably about 120, 150, maybe, I'm guessing. I mean, if you want to compare apples to apples here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, no, you're not really that far off. And, you know, obviously your source of power is different. You know, you can get into that conversation, but it was kind of an interesting, you know, situation to kind of see that this is an expense. Like, you know, I think a lot of people get into EVs, you know, because they feel like, you know, going electric is maybe going to save them, you know, a decent amount versus like having to buy gas and all of that. But, you know, if you're really needing to do a long commute, especially in something like this, you know, obviously consumables are a factor, your tires, your brakes, you know, things like that. But, you know, charging is, you know, it's not that far off from, you know, needing to get gas a lot in my opinion, at least.
Well, again, range anxiety kicks in once again. Our good old friend, range anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, like I said, EVs are great if you have something somewhat small, like a small SUV or like even those Tesla 3s or Tesla with the doors that swing up and open or whatever. You get those kind of cars and they're, you know, fine. You can run around in those and if you live in the city and stuff. I think the last Uber ride I was in up in LA for the Charger game, we had a Tesla, the guy had. And I was watching that little screen on the dash and it has like all the different cars going across. I always like silhouettes of cars and people kind of going across the screen and around you in front of you and all. I thought it was kind of cool to see that kind of stuff as we drove to the game. But yeah, I mean, I guess if you live in the city, but I don't know about long distance driving with something like those.
It just takes a lot of planning. You know, and to be honest, you know, I think there were some pros to more so in the sense of, you know, just the space, the comfortability, like, you know, just what they're able to do with an EV platform truck versus a standard truck. You know, it's kind of cool to see that progress.
And you had the frunk in the front.
The frunk was definitely cool to have. You got a massive truck bed, which in that you can, I think you had mentioned how in your truck you can take those seats out, drop those seats flat, and then, you know, have sort of more storage space in there.
Yeah, I don't know about the Chevy, but I know that with mine, the actual back seats, there's two back seats. It's not quite split in the middle equally. It's like a longer it's like section. And then like, it's like, it's like three, two seats are connected. They fold up in a bench and the other third seat on the side. But all of them can be flipped up and they lock into place up. And it leaves a big flat cargo area in the back. So you can like put all kinds of stuff back there or whatever you want to do. It works out great. I love it. I love it so much. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it kind of has a similar setup with that. And they also have, I don't know if you fully have to remove the seats. I imagine you probably do, but you can obviously take the seats out and then you can take out the panel basically that separates the bed from the cargo area or the actual, you know, the inside of the truck. And you can then take that out and the glass and have that entire space to haul something in.
No way. It kind of reminds me of that old truck they used to have. Chevy had one. It was called the Avalanche, I think.
Chevy, I don't understand why they didn't call this car the Avalanche. Because if you look at it, it looks just like the old Avalanche in terms of its design. Some of like the callbacks to like that weird pillar in the back.
Yeah,
it was such a missed opportunity to not call that the Avalanche. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I was like, man,
what's this one called?
It's just a Silverado EV. It's how unique. Yeah, exactly. And their whole thing is like, you know, anything that they make EV from their regular cars, they put a blue E the signifier. Yeah. But man, I thought it was, and maybe that's why they didn't do the Avalanche. I mean, they could have made the E at the end, the blue, like, you know, it was such a missed opportunity. Cause my brother has an Avalanche. I don't know a year, but early 2000s. And, you know, you can definitely see the callbacks and you can see that was a little bit of an influence of design.
Yeah. So. The Avalanche, I never really understood it when it came out. Is it supposed to be a Silverado or is it not a Silverado? Is it supposed to be an SUV, but it's not really an SUV? I was kind of like a weird, you know, I remember those things came out, when the commercial came out for it and they made a big deal about it. How it can transform into like an SUV and a truck.
Yeah.
But not really. I mean, I don't know.
They were making them at the same time, right?
They still had
a Silverado.
Of course.
I guess they were really trying to kind of blend more. The Avalanche was maybe a little bit more of like an SUV truck combo, whereas like the Silverado was like a truck, a pickup truck, maybe.
Yeah. Well, honest review opinion, what'd you think of the whole thing all in all as you drove it?
Whole thing, I mean, I thought it was cool at the end of the day. You know, it was just cool to, I mean, Super Cruise is, in my opinion, a lot better than my experience with Tesla's self-driving.
So for those who don't know, what is Super Cruise?
So Super Cruise is essentially adaptive cruise control, but it's also a step forward where it is truly hands-off steering and basically, you know, self-driving at that point. And the way that Chevy is able to actually market it as fully hands-off is because it's only available on mapped roads and it's usually like major interstate highways and other like very well-known state highways that they're able to actually map.
I wonder why that makes a difference.
I just think that the level of potential, you know, issues goes down when the system knows exactly and has fully mapped out these roads.
But if you look at your maps in your car, like I follow like Apple Maps or whatever, it shows the exit. It shows like the trees along the exit. It shows like the structures on the right side or left side.
Yeah.
It shows that stuff on any road you drive on.
Yeah.
So I just wondered why they need to have their roads mapped out. The traffic is going to be different, you know, from today to tomorrow.
Well, that's where the adaptive cruise comes in. So it has adaptive cruise control. So it knows like when a car is in front of you and like the distance to keep from the car. And then one caveat is if it knows, because it has ways of sensing when you're in like a construction zone or if it's a highway that has like deviated because they're doing construction and maybe they've like shifted lanes over in a different direction, it instantly knows that and it'll flag you and tell you like, okay, you're no longer in Super Cruise. You need to take control because it now doesn't know exactly how the road goes in relation to what it's already mapped.
Side note on the Super Cruise and the Tesla thing. I got to know this.
Yeah.
Can you get pulled over if it's driving for you? And does it automatically like pull the car over if a car, if you're like, let's just say you're quote unquote resting your eyes while you're in Super Cruise, and then the cops like pull you over, does the car follow instructions or does it keep on going? And if it does pull you over, you do pull over, you say, I wasn't driving it, the car was driving. Can I get out of a ticket?
Yeah. The way that they've gotten around that, I think, is because Super Cruise specifically has an eye sensor right above the steering wheel. And it gives you a little bit of time to, you know, maybe look in another direction, or if you were looking down briefly, like it's not going to instantly kick you out. I felt like with Tesla self-drive, like it'll give you an alert. And if you don't grab the wheel or like do what you have to do, the prompt within like a second or two, it's like yelling at you. And if you do that enough times, it'll just kick you out of self-driving for like a certain period of time, which I thought was ridiculous. But with Super Cruise, it's always monitoring your eyes. And so at a certain point, I think it's around 5 seconds or so, if you're like sustained, like not looking at the eye sensor and it knows that you're not looking forward, it'll kick you out.
But can you fool it with like sunglasses though?
No, because I was wearing glasses and I, you know, I could tell like when it knew that it has like a small little indicator on like the screen that shows that like your eyes are engaged, and when you're not looking at it, it shows that they aren't. And after a while, like it'll start to flash to tell you like either look or like you're going to get kicked out of Super Cruise.
Do you remember that story a few years ago? I remember when Tesla was talking about this whole thing that this guy somehow, I don't know how he did this, but he was able to like,
get
in the back seat of his car. Yeah. Like let it drive for him. Like I don't know. First you have to get the car going. So I guess the car's going, and then would he climb over the seat or something while it's going?
I think they got around that too now, where they, and I think that like people that were doing that was really what sparked a lot more like a lot more nannying of like super, you know, self-driving and all of like those different capabilities. But now it's like, it's basically like if you, I don't know how you would be smart enough to trick it by like not, you know, not taking off your seatbelt. Because,
car does that these days. It warns you, seatbelts off.
Yeah, so like the moment you take your seatbelt off in any car, like even in my car now, like I have steering assist, and so it'll steer for you, and then you can put on cruise control, and so you know you're not fully obviously autonomous driving, but it does steer for you. But the moment you unlatch your seatbelt, it kicks you out of that, and it dings and does all of the stuff. So I don't know how you would be able to trick it to be able to get out of the seat without undoing your seatbelt. If you were just that small enough and slippery enough as a person to do that, then maybe you could, you know trick some of these. But
what's funny though is that my truck, well, and at least on the passenger side, anyways, most vehicles have this. It's like they have that driver's, that passenger side airbag, and they have sensors built into the seat. My old truck had these that this built in. So if you're sitting in the seat with anything heavier than like, I think 70 pounds or something like that,
It thinks that somebody's there.
Right. And if nobody's there, it deactivates the airbag because it can crush a kid or whatever kind of stuff. So I try to fool it and like sit up and stand up, see if I can trick it.
Like I said, I'm sure that there's always some way to get around it and test the system. I'm sure probably these companies started just hiring people now to like, you know, how do you, just like cybersecurity, like where they hired, you know, these people to like, you know, break their security system so that they know how to like avoid it. Like
that'd be a good job. I think I'd be good for that job. I'm always finding the holes in everybody's system at work. Like we're gonna do this now. I said, well, that's gonna fail because of this.
Yeah.
Well, just shut up and do it, Chris. Okay.
Do it and prove it wrong. And yeah, that well, if things don't work out with anything else, I'm sure, like I said, that exists. So they're probably not posting it very often on Indeed or anything, but I bet you any money there's some positions that are out there like that. But yeah, nonetheless, you know, back to your original question, though, I think things like Super Cruise, just overall the convenience of, you know, getting in an EV and just going, you're not worried about warming up the truck or warming up the car. You just hop in, you go where you need to go. The thing looked cool. Like I just really, I sort of felt like, you know, it was a cool truck. It was a cool car. You know, just how elevated it is. You're sitting above everybody.
You sure are, buddy.
I was at basically almost the level of like truckers, like when you drive by. It's a little lower. It's not as big, but you're up there. And so like there's rarely anything else on the road that's like as like high up as you are. You know, the torque is just, you know, the very interesting thing about it is because it's so heavy, you do get initial kick the same way you do with normal EVs, but it tapers off kind of quickly because it's just so much weight that's being moved. But it's still enough instant torque for you to like any passing situation that you need to get in with this huge truck, you can normally just do it. Like you just put your foot down and you're, you know, you're away from whatever situation you were trying to get away from.
Does it have any, like my truck, I was thinking when you said that, but my truck, I've got like 6 or 5 different driving modes. Does it have any driving modes at all in this thing, or is it all standard just drive?
No, so it does. It has like your, you know, your sort of like major drive modes, like off-road, snow, like different things like that. But you actually can make a custom mode that alters your throttle response. Obviously your amount of like torque in your motor and how it responds, your steering, and then your suspension. And usually there's like a touring there's a normal and there's a sport for like those three settings. And I actually ended up, I didn't realize for a while that I was actually in sport suspension. And I didn't really like how that
was
felt.
Was it really
in
tough a big or truck. Something?
It was, there were certain roads that I drove down, like this is way more tough, way more, you know, bumpy than it needs to be. And when I figured out like that I was in sport, I was like, okay, let's put suspension in touring. Let's, you know, keep the steering in middle road. And then obviously I kept the torque, you know, at full kind of sport mode. But you do have modes. You can switch them up. You know, it still sort of drives truck-ish. Like it's, you know, when you are on still some bumpier roads and things, like it's you know, it sways a bit, but it's also a little stiff, like in certain spots where you would, you know, if you were in like a big like Cadillac SUV, you know, you would probably soak up those bumps maybe a little bit more than the truck does. But it wasn't like a deal breaker. I'm used to kind of, you know, harsh ride in a sense. So that's not a deal breaker for me. It might be for other people. But, you know, the biggest con, you know, we talked about it was the range anxiety. I just am not still on the camp of just what it takes to kind of live with an EV. It's still just a lot of adjusting versus like a gas
powered car. So you wouldn't buy one, you're saying, if you know.
It's an interesting situation too, because I would consider it if I knew that I was doing some light towing with it.
Talk about range anxiety. That towing has got to kill that.
But that's
that
why
power.
I say light. Yeah, that's why I say light. Like, I wouldn't be taking this, like, you know, even I wouldn't be taking it, say, if I live here in San Diego, like, you know, towing a car out to, like, you know, Chuckwalla out in, like, Central California. Like, I probably wouldn't even do anything like that.
I wonder if anybody really does. People who have Lightnings or even the Rivians or whatever. I've seen people with the Teslas with tow hooks on them and stuff too.
But are they actually using it for that?
Well, I think it's like options. You know, like I have my four wheel drive, my truck. I rarely like ever, never use it. Right. And I have a tow package in my truck, never really use it. But if I had to, I could, you know? And I think that's what it comes down to, is like having the ability and the capability to use it, even though you don't use it, to be able to use it in case you do need to use it.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm at, is that it would be cool to have it to use, like if I was just, you know, for some light towing that's more local within like a, you know, 100 miles or so of where I live, and, you know, just needed that for that reason. You can still use it as just like a great, just like transport vehicle, because it's just so roomy. Materials are pretty nice. They're not like top notch. You know, there is some plastics and some things like that, you know, when what these things cost new was maybe a little bit unacceptable. Now, like on the used market, there may be.
Okay. So what was do you check out the sticker price on the vehicle?
That's a good question. Cause I did look up used prices, but I don't know if I looked them up.
Here, take a guess. Like, how much would you buy that thing brand new?
How much would I want to pay, or
how much is it? Like, if you went to the dealership, you want to buy that same truck brand new, what do you think you'd be spending?
I mean, I know it was over 100.
Over 100.
I think it was, I think the RST model specifically was over 100. And I cheated, actually, because I knew this one was the RST first edition. And so MSRP on them were actually 120.
Damn.
Okay. Which, again, that is a very ridiculous price point for, you know, again, what a lot of people are going to use this for.
And I wonder if the guy you rented it from, I wonder if he just leases these things, you know?
I wonder if it's even possible, because you're using it for a rental car service.
Is that, is that like one of the caveats? You can't do that? I don't know. I have no idea.
I think it's similar to, well, that's more insurance related, I think, where you know,
yeah, I'm not using it for anything sharing, else other than going back and forth to work 5 miles away. Wink, wink, wink.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if that might be a limitation to actually being able to lease one of these. But I imagine, like, you know, a big, you know, way of, you know, offsetting this, the expenses of these is, you know, even if he did, you know, get a loan on the car or whatever, or the truck, like, you know, being able to rent it out and, you know, use it for that has probably helped a lot. If he got it used, though, I looked up used prices on these. This, for a year old truck, this is probably a good little conversation piece. How much do you think it's depreciated in 1 year?
Well, it depends on the mileage, I would think. I mean, okay, in a standard year, most cars, what, do like 10 to 15, maybe 15,000, maybe a year?
Let's call it 10,000. Like, if it do, like, just say average is like 10 to 12, how much would you expect 120 grand truck to cost a year later? Just if you were to take a guess.
I don't know how hot EVs are these days, if they're people really bought. Yeah. So I would say probably in the maybe around 90 or 89.
Ooh, it would be even worse than that. It would be worse than that if you owned it. But if you were looking at these and you were actually interested, you'd be a lot happier.
60?
60. I'm seeing some for like high 50s. And they're only a year old with like 12,000 miles.
Well, I think the full size like EV truck department, it's kind of weird. So as far as your competitors go, what do you have? Like you have the, of course, the holy grail of the Cybertruck itself. And then you have the Ford Lightning, which I heard they're getting rid of that truck. I heard they're not going to keep doing it.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, I just heard something on Instagram. I didn't, you know, fact check any of that. I just saw somebody post on Instagram that they are discontinuing the Ford Lightning. And I'm like, that's crazy. And of course, you got the Rivian, which is smaller. And I think, of course, you got Scout coming out, I think next year, the year after that. They got a truck and an SUV, all electric. And like, I thought the Lightning was kind of cool because it was very similar to what I already have. It's like, it's like, all right, I'm already used to the size of the vehicle. I'm already used to everything and all the buttons and all the doors and all the, everything with the seats. And I know it, you know, it's like moving in something you already know versus something completely you don't, it's totally unknown. But I don't know, like, I don't know if I would, I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know if I'd buy one though, you know, I don't know if I'd really would want to buy a full size EV. Maybe. I don't know, but they're so damn expensive. Like brand new, 100
for 60,
grand.
Yeah. I mean, for 60 grand, like, I mean, you can get you a very great, a very good Raptor for that price.
Use one.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah. Brand new.
Yeah. I think the brand new ones, because my truck, the sticker on my truck was 70.
Oh, and yeah. So the Raptors.
So,
yeah.
But that's kind of had the Roush package on top. That Roush package alone was $15,000 on top of the price of the truck. So my truck was 55 grand. For my truck without the Roush package, 55 grand, because I have two window stickers. I have a window sticker for the truck from Ford, and I have a window sticker, an additional window sticker from Roush.
Yeah.
On top, like for the Roush package. So that was then, and I bought my other truck, my other F-150. I got a killer deal on it, I think about it. I paid like $33,000 for my other truck, and it was like virtually the same truck, except it didn't have the four-wheel drive, and some of the bells and whistles didn't have, but it was the F-150 XLT, crew cab, chrome and tow, 5.0 engine, all that stuff. I paid like 33 grand for it. This is back in 2011.
Yeah.
So, which is, God, I would love to have a truck that size for 33 grand brand new, you know, with a V8 and everything today. I don't think you can find it.
Yeah.
It's inflation, man. That's the way everything's going up. The price of everything and the price of cars. And I mean, it's crazy. I think, if you can do your homework, you might be able to find a good used vehicle that will still last and still run.
You gave a list too. I mean, on cool cars, like for under, like, you know, under 10K, but like my mind always goes to, I'm just one of those people that when I think of like buying a new car, quote unquote, I always go used for whatever like the price point is. Like I consider what used car can I look at for that price point before I even consider a new car. The N was the only car that, and again, it was my car was used when I bought it. But you know, even that car, like I was like, okay, I could try and find like a 23 model and, you know, with no miles and, you know, try and get that. But my mind went straight to like, okay, if I can find something used that, you know, maybe has 5,000 miles, maybe 10, like that's going to just save me so much money and it's still going to be a great experience.
Yeah. The thing for me though, was when I bought my first truck and this other truck, this new truck I have, was that all of the incredibly good like interest rates are only available for the new vehicles. Yeah. And all the rebates they give you and all the great deals and all the cool stuff, it usually only works with like new vehicles.
Yeah.
And they even top off that 36-gallon tank. Well, dude, they topped it off for free for me, man. When you buy a new car, they give you a full
tank. They normally don't. Yeah.
On used cars, they don't at all. Because I bought my Z used and I asked them for a tank of gas. I said, no, we don't do that. That's a used car. I'm like, what? I thought you guys did that.
It's like, that's $40 or $50. It's like, we still don't do that.
Yeah. So it was so nice that they washed it and filled it up and even changed out the battery for me and all kinds of on my truck when I bought it. And that was great when I bought my other, nice thing about buying new vehicles, you get that and you get like no miles on it. I think my truck had like less than 20 miles on it when I bought it. It's whatever they took it just to like do a few test drives in the thing and take it off the delivery truck or whatever. So
that is a cool experience though.
It is super cool, you know, knowing that every mile is your miles and that it's something you bought. You're the only one that had it. So, you know, every problem with the truck, every ding, it's your ding. It's your thing. Cause when you buy a used car, even when I have my Z, it's like all these little quirks and different things. Like, what did he do here? And what's this here? Did he fix this? Did he not fix that? Is this damage from him or is it from me or whatever? It's like dealing with other people's problems when you buy a used car.
It is a good point.
You know, and I think it also depends what you use the car for too, because if you know you're going to put like a ton of miles on a car, like if you do like say a traveling salesman kind of job or something where you're like real estate or something where you're traveling a lot, you obviously can't lease a car because you're going to go way over in miles on a lease. And if you buy a used car, you're going to put the thing in the grave early.
Or you just gonna have to deal with just headaches with something that might not be as reliable as you expect it to be as well. And, you know, and then, when something does happen, you're covering the costs. And I mean, that's a good point.
There's all these things you got to factor. And I was going to tell you that I think there is like a mathematical formula to the sweet spot for when you actually buy a used car. Like there's a spot where the depreciation hits a certain level to where the car is still like considered in like kind of newish range still. I think it's around maybe 4 years, maybe I'm thinking 4 year, 5 year with like 60,000 on the clock, you know, something around there, maybe 50,000. Maybe if you can get around 50,000, 5 years old, maybe it's kind of like the sweet range. Cause that way it depreciated the most amount of the value. I don't know. That's a whole video I saw on this, like figure out the way to buy a best way to buy a used car, like what time and mileage to buy a used car. Cause some of these used cars, like when you said like the EV, it lost that much money in 1 year. Now imagine in 5 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you probably can get get down for like maybe 30 grand.
Yeah. You always wonder where the floor is for something with 750 horsepower and like, you know, essentially a luxury truck. But yeah, I see. There's always pops up in my head about how low can this really go before it's just absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, you have to buy it. Like,
well, if you want to know the vehicle that like depreciates the most, go look at used Range Rovers.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
They start at like 120 or whatever they are. And then I seen them for 10 grand, like 10 grand. Dude, but that thing will give you so many nightmares. I've heard horror stories about Range Rovers and used Range Rovers always in the shop. And everybody who's had one hates them. And they're just money pits. And if they're money pit. And that's why they drop so much in value. You see, you will see a lot of BMWs too. Like I've seen some BMWs.
Yeah, I was going to say BMW, some older Mercedes.
Like, oh yeah, like not even that old. We say older, not like that old.
Yeah,
like,
I know. Yeah,
like 2014,
15.
Yeah. And they're selling for like 10, 12 grand.
Yeah.
That was like an $80,000 car, you know? Yeah. So that's something you have to really consider when you buy something like that. And you got to like figure out why was this car, you think it's a great deal. I'd be like, why is it a great deal?
Yeah.
You know,
you got to really scrutinize that.
And it depends what you want to do with the car. If you want to keep the car in the shop, make it a project car for the track or whatever, fine, whatever. Yeah. That probably doesn't matter. But if you're actually going to depend on that car to drive 300 miles or whatever you got to do for your work or whatever you got to do, then you might want something that's probably more reliable. And yeah, that works best for you. So I'm glad that truck worked out for you, man.
Yeah, no, I had fun with it for sure. It was a cool experience. And yeah, you know, I just kind of gotten a new found interest in, you know, kind of the truck lifestyle a little bit. And, you know, down the road, I've always, you know, said it like, you know, there'll be a use for it, you know, or something like that. But we'll see if that time comes, if it would be an EV truck or whether I'd, like I said, be getting a Raptor or something.
Dude, you got to get a Gen 1 Raptor.
Yeah.
If you can find one. The thing about my truck, what I kind of hate still even today is parking. I hate parking my truck because I got to back it in every spot I go into. It's not because I'm trying to show off. It's not because I'm trying to be cool. It's because the way the wheels are in the front, the steering wheels are in the front. So when you back into a tight spot, you're pivoting the rear of the vehicle in a tight maneuver. That's why forklifts, when you go to like warehouses, the forklifts, the steering is always in the rear.
It's in the back, yeah.
Right. So they can pivot in tight little spots. And so people get mad. Like, why are you backing the truck in? Because you literally can't nose it in at this approach. You can't, unless I swing really, really wide, and there's not enough space to swing really, really wide. So I have to back it in. So I do it. I back in it all the time. That's Did you have problems must, when yeah. you when you drove that thing? We have problems parking it?
No, well, no, not really. The one time where I was in downtown because I was grabbing a quick breakfast, I had and this is just a downtown issue mainly, but I did have to parallel park, and it's on a busy one-way street where there's a bunch of people still coming actively while you're trying to park. And so I when I saw the spot, because I knew I was there weren't a lot, I had to kind of go in a bit nose first, but not fully, because I knew I wasn't going to be able to park it that way, but to allow the cars behind me to go past. But then as I'm trying to come back out a little bit so that I can start to then back in and actually park properly, you have to worry about all of the people that are in the lane next to you that don't care at all that you're trying to park, and they're just trying to go straight. And at the whole time while you're trying to do this, the sensors in the car are telling you that there's an approaching car coming. Oh, watch out.
Ding, ding, ding,
so
ding.
You're getting dings and your seat actually vibrates while you're doing this too. And so you're trying to ignore all of that because it's I know that that's happening, but I need to go out so I can come back in and park. And so once I actually was able to angle it properly and come in, the cameras just help it so much to be able to get the right angle. You get the whole trajectory line in the rear view and everything. And so really, I don't think it would be an issue in a normal situation, but on a one-way street in downtown Sacramento was a stressful situation.
Well, what I've been doing is we're in a busy parking lot and I'm pulling up to a spot that I'm going to back in. I got to swing out to the left so I can back in behind me, right? And I'll turn my four-way flashers on to kind of alert people, because people try to sneak in behind you while you're backing up, which is totally dangerous. There I'm backing into a spot. You're trying to close the gap between me and the spot. You're going to get hit. So that sometimes happens. And sometimes people are confused that you're back in the vehicle and you think you're going to nose it in or think you're going to do something else. So you kind of have to figure this out. I try to park away from other cars. And if I see a spot that looks too small, I'm like, I don't think I want that spot, So I would just pass on that spot, from time to time. So it's a challenge. And I'm sure places like Texas or Oklahoma that have I'm sure lots of land and lots of places to park and stuff, I'm sure they don't, no problem at all. But out here in the
you're
city,
dealing with some silly, city spots.
Although I did see Raptors in New York City. Physically in New York City, parked on the side, like you said, parallel parked like you did, in the side of these one-way streets. They were parked there. And I had to take a picture. I couldn't believe it. I saw a full-size Gen 2 or 3 Raptor, the newer ones, parked in New York City on those one-way streets, the tiny little streets, parked on the side there. I was like, look, check this out. They drive those trucks down here. They park them down here. Check that out.
Yeah. That's a feat right there for sure. Cause like I said, it can be done. And now with the modern tech, it can make it a lot easier than it would have been in the past, but it's something you used to. I get so frustrated though. When you're in a parking garage or you're just in a parking lot and you have somebody that's cause I mean, I always back in even with my car just because it's just habit, that's just the car guy in me, I guess you can say, but there's you get those people that are always just right on you. And you know that it's going to be an issue when you actually find the spot, because they're going to be too, when you actually go to reverse in, they're going to be too close, and they're not going to understand that you're backing in. They're going to think you're doing something else. I've tried to now, like you said, put your flashers on to let people know that you're looking for a spot, so they know to maybe ease up and give you some space. But that's one of my biggest frustrations is people that are just in a rush in a parking garage or a parking lot. And, they just want to be on you. And then they get angry when now you're trying to when they have to wait for you now, or hey, I have to even back up a little bit so you can get into a spot. And to your point, you try and maybe park away and give people their space and everything. But just a pet peeve of mine, if you're in parking lots, just chill. We're all going to find a spot eventually.
Right. No kid road rage and people, that happens all the time, man. So it's one of those things. But so the experience you went on out there for work and rented the car, did you get, you said, some footage for your YouTube channel?
I did. Yeah. I got a decent amount. Yeah. Some good camera shots. couple drone shots actually, and it's really cool. Like, I wanted to just a little heads up of the potential screenshot or this thumbnail is I found this like sort of industrial area. I think it was like maybe a refinery or something out there that in the evening where it had like sort of the smoke billowing out of like the chimneys and everything. And it's this cool shot that I got with my drone with the Silverado EV next to kind of like the oil refinery with like all of like the smoke coming out. And I thought it was maybe a nice contrast a little bit.
I would say, yeah, definitely, for sure.
But yeah, got some great footage. I'll probably have to do some voiceover stuff to kind of collaborate everything in terms of my thoughts overall. But okay. Yeah, I'm excited to pull something together.
Is it going to be like spread across multiple videos or just one?
No, it'll just be a single video. And like I said, it'll be an experiment with the channel because, you know, when you change up anything with your, you know, natural flow at YouTube, it really depends on how well it's received. So, you know, because it's going to be so different from like my like last run of content over the last couple of months, I have no idea how it's going to perform, really. But I want to give it a shot because, you know, I don't necessarily want to start getting into like full on car reviews. But I want to have like that flexibility to every once in a while kind of throw in, say, a test driving experience or, you know, maybe share an experience with driving like, you know, a friend's car. Like my friend has an S15 Silvia and he's talked about kind of having a little video just driving his car and things like that. And so, you know, just here and there, I want to have the flexibility to say, like, change up the car of the channel and talk about something different. But I still, obviously, the core right now is the end content. And so, like I said, taking a little bit of a risk, but I think it'll be fun. You know, at the end of the day, you just kind of have to do things, see how it's received, and just keep moving. So I'm excited.
That's fantastic. Well, Courage, I want to thank you once again for stopping by the, you know, the CCC Studios, as we call it around here.
Yeah.
And
always a pleasure to be on.
Man, this has been fantastic. And once again, can you tell everybody where they can find you and your YouTube channel?
Yeah. Oh, thanks for the plug. Yeah. If you search up the Driven Dad, the Driven Dad 22 will take you right there. But Driven Dad is the YouTube channel and also on Instagram. Like I said, a lot of Elantrian content, but some other stuff on different brands and just facts and things like that. So feel free to check it out.
Fantastic. And you listening at home, don't forget to check out CoolCarsWithChris.com. Subscribe to this show. And if you could, it'd be so awesome if you could leave a rating and review. Hopefully it's a 5-star. You know we're worth it. Come on now. And until next time, I will catch you later.